You're listening to Vatican Radio. With a message to Orthodox believers throughout the world, the Holy and Great Council of the Orthodox Church completed its week-long encounter on Sunday. In the document, leaders of the 10 local or autocephalous churches taking part in the meeting expressed particular concern for Christians in the Middle East. They condemned military violence, persecution, the expulsion and murder of members of religious minorities, forced conversions, torture, executions, and the trafficking of refugees. The council, presided over by Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, took place at the Orthodox Academy on the Greek island of Crete. On its agenda was the discussion of six documents on the topics of marriage, fasting, the question of autonomy, the Orthodox diaspora, the mission of the Church in today's world, and the issue of relations with other Christian churches. Father Chrysostom Nassis is a professor in the theology faculty at the University of Thessaloniki and was a member of the delegation of the Patriarchate of Jerusalem at the Council. He talked to me about the results of this long-awaited encounter.
One of the most significant results of the Council is the fact that the autocephalous churches got together and expressed their unity in the sacraments, especially the celebration of the Eucharist. We were celebrating the Eucharist every day from the Feast of Pentecost, according to the Byzantine calendar, the Orthodox calendar, until the Feast of All Saints. And that was perhaps one of the most important things. We also had the ability to discuss these documents that were sent to the Council by the last synaxy, the meeting of the primates of the Orthodox churches that was held in Geneva in January of 2016.
What about the fact that four of the 14 churches, though, decided not to attend this meeting? How does that in any way undermine or diminish the validity of this council?
In our tradition, the validity of councils is not something that happens institutionally. We have this theological principle of reception. Physically, the four Orthodox churches, were not present. These were the Patriarchate of Antioch, the Church of Russia, the Church of Bulgaria, and the Church of Georgia. In the deliberations, these four churches were very present. We mentioned them time and again. We respected some of the very important points that they made in previous discussions leading up to the council. And we also attempted, the council also attempted to formulate the documents in such a way that it would be very easy for them to be received by the churches in a future meeting, or not even in a meeting, just by themselves unilaterally, they could sign on to these documents. This process has been set in motion by some of the prelates, the patriarchs of the churches that were present. There has been communication, albeit unofficial, informal communication between people and friends. We all are friends. We all have relationships, you know, among the churches. And this is a process that has begun. We see this in church history from the very beginning. The question, for example, of the first ecumenical council held in Nicaea in 325. There's a process by which these councils are received by the plenitude of the faithful, the church in its entirety. And this is very important in the process, the conciliar process of the church.
So what is the next step moving on from here? I mean, was there any talk of any kind of future council or ways of bringing these other churches, these four churches, back into the fold again, if you like?
They're not out of the fold. That's the first thing that we have to stress. They are not out of the fold. They are very much in the fold. We consider ourselves as the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. All 14 Orthodox churches, autocephalous churches, constitute one church. So we are not in any form of estrangement or even worse, schism. As far as moving forward, we have discussed it during the council. It was mentioned time and again that this must now become a very clearly defined institution of the church. We very much understand the life of the church as being conciliar. And it is very important for the 14 autocephalous churches to continue in this way. Another very important step would be to formalize in some way, give more of a canonical validity to the synaxis, the gathering, the assembly of the 14 primates of the autocephalous Orthodox churches. This was also discussed, and I believe over the next few months, some of these things will be fleshed out further, clarified, and decided upon in due course.
How much impact do you think the work of this council will have on the lives of ordinary believers back home in the countries that were represented there?
Well, one of the things we have to keep in mind is that this council was primarily a pastoral council. It was not a theological council in the academic sense of the term. It was internal, and this is something that is going to flesh itself out over the next few months, depending on how effective we are in informing the faithful of the outcomes of the council. This is something that happens on many levels in the Orthodox Church. For example, how much of an impact, this is a very important question, how much of an impact does the celebration of the Eucharist, of the Divine Liturgy, have on the world, on a very kind of mundane approach to this question, one will say not much, but on a very deep spiritual level, it has cosmic impact. The same thing with the council. The council will have an impact spiritually, internally, in a very profound way, but it's very difficult to put it down in like kind of a spreadsheet and an Excel program or something like this. These things are very important to keep in mind. And in fact, something that has been mentioned by many people is that the council, the fruits of the council, have already been born in the preconciliar phase. Many, many of these things have been discussed time and again and have impacted the life of the church even before the council itself had taken place. In the theological schools, in the churches, in the parishes, the question, for example, of the matrimony and the question of the so-called inter-Christian marriages, this is something that has been discussed time and again in the churches on the regional level. The fruits of the council have already been born in the phase leading up to the council. So this will continue. We are now in the post-conciliar phase, and we now have the final decisions, the final documents. The voice of the church has been expressed, and now it's time for it to be interpreted properly and also to be received by the fullness of the church.
One of the biggest sources of tension, as I understand it, during the discussions was the question of relations with other Christian churches, and in particular with the Catholic Church. What can you tell us about that and about the outcome of that discussion?
Well, the question of the relation with the Catholic Church was not, so to speak, at the center of the discussion, especially with respect to the document outlining the relations of the Orthodox Church with the rest of the Christian world. If someone studies the text carefully, it is more in tune with the question of the participation of the Orthodox Church in the ecumenical movement in general, and the WCC in particular, the World Council of Churches in particular. The text itself mentions bilateral theological dialogues of the Orthodox Church, and it stresses the fact that we are committed to bilateral theological discussions with other churches, including, of course, the Roman Catholic Church. We all know that we have the Joint International Commission for the Theological Dialogue between the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church. That is something that has been very important to both of our churches. It is also very important to keep in mind that one of the important emphases in the text is that we have to maintain this favorable and positive disposition to the dialogue, as well as to realize that even though there might be difficulties, which of course are inherent in such endeavors, these difficulties must constantly be worked towards overcoming. And in the conciliar document, there is an emphasis on the fact that we as an Orthodox Church should not find, so to speak, reasons in order to withdraw from such a dialogue. And a process by which a church could withdraw from a dialogue is kind of procedurally outlined in the document. So there was an attempt to emphasize the need for commitment to this dialogue, which is something that is widely accepted in Orthodox churches. And one of the most hopeful, and this was stated also during the deliberations of the council, one of the most hopeful dialogues and the most important dialogues for us is the one with the Roman Catholic Church. precisely because of the maintaining of the evangelical spirit and the commandments in both of our churches at the level they have been maintained over the last few decades. And that's why this document in particular, the one that has to do with the relations of the Orthodox Church with the rest of the Christian world, has as its main core the question of how to continue with some of the other dialogue within the ecumenical movement that are more problematic, I would say.